You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
We have too many things, you know? It's so easy to lose things now. There's too many of them.
Yeah.
Back in the day of, you know, cave people, there was what? There was like rocks and some wood for fire. There wasn't that much. It was harder to lose things.
Sticks and stones. That's about where it began and ended.
Mm-hmm. Very 21st century man by you, Billy, saying to cave people. It's very, very progressive of you.
Also, Billy, over the course of 3.5 hours, you displayed a variety of shit that you own that is absolutely astounding.
It was great.
So you bemoaning other people having too much stuff is...
Billy, that was so rich. That was such a good. Oh, I don't know what got left in the bin of content that didn't get used, but as a device, you reaching through shit and just putting out just garbage in a box.
How dare you? Those are my most prized possessions. Beauty's in the eye of the beholder, Dan. You know, one man's trash is another man's treasure, as they say, or one person's trash is another person's treasure, as Amin would say.
21st century, ma'am.
I have like a closet with just duplicate bobbleheads, like on shelves, that I don't know what I'm going to do with
them. An entire closet?
Well, no, it's not. No, like it's a shelf on a closet. I also have what I didn't get to, which is still next to me. I have a bobblehead graveyard. It was very devastating. So what happened was there was the incident of, let's say, I don't remember what year it was, but it was a horrible incident. I had to move a bookshelf because the cable people were coming or the phone people. I don't know what it was, but I had to move a bookshelf and I had these bobbleheads on the top of a bookshelf along with a bat. And I said, you know what? I could take down all these bobbleheads or I could just kind of shimmy this bookshelf over a little bit so that the phone person can get to the phone wire jack or whatever it's called. And what happened was I hit the corner of a tile and the corner of the tile is the enemy of anything you're trying to slide on the floor. And it tipped the bookshelf forward. And with the bookshelf came the bat. And the bat acted like the thing that sweeps the bowling pins off the bowling lane and threw all of the bobbleheads 8 feet to the ground. And now I have this graveyard of, Marlins World Series Championship bobbleheads. Here's Jeff Conine. Missing his left arm, which is okay because he's right-handed, but he's missing his left arm and he's missing his World Series trophy. Oh, I thought this was Jeff's arm, but no, this is someone's right arm holding a World Series trophy. And I don't know whose that is. Wow, it seems like it was a devastating day for Mr. Marlin because here he is holding his 1995 All-Star Game Most Valuable Player trophy, missing his legs and base. So I thought, you know what? These should be easy enough to replace. I'll just go online and I'll buy some of these bobbleheads. Oh, no. Here's a beheaded, I think, Miguel Cabrera. Very sad. I thought I could just go online and buy these and kind of replace them. And then I found some of these seem to be quite valuable and were going for like $200. And I said, you know what? I lost about 20 of these. I'm not going to spend $4,000 replacing these bobbleheads. So I didn't. Here's Pudge. Poor guy lost his arm and his... both arms and his leg is fractured here, ready to come off as
Billy,
well.
Billy, how mortified were you? Thousands of dollars in destruction when that shelf fell, correct? How mortified were you when you saw all of your deformed and disabled bobbleheads?
Well, as you can tell, Dan, since there is the graveyard for them, I still haven't given up entirely on them. And I think that maybe I can piece them back together. But those surgeries haven't begun yet, but I did save them, and it was a very sad day. It was both frustrating and sad because it was my own doing, and it was something that could have been completely preventable. And sure enough, the corner of that tile, as we all know, the enemy of sliding things across the tile floor, brought the end of many of my prized bobbleheads that day. I still have more, but those were my most prized ones. Those are the ones that I had displayed. And
can you take us through, though? Can you paint a picture of all of it happening? Do you scream?
It's very bloody.
Well, do you scream, though? Like, your reaction when it happens? Do you fall to your knees? What happened?
Well, it happened almost in slow motion. I could see it coming because I hit the corner and then I saw the bat rolling and I saw them coming towards me, and I tried as I could to reach out and try to catch them, but there was too many falling at the same time. I likened it to paratroopers coming out of a plane without parachutes. They were all just coming so, so fast, but also so, so slow, if that makes sense. And bounced off my hands. The trophy's very sharp, very pinchy. I don't think I was wearing shoes, so I had to make a decision at one point in time. Do I let these bobbleheads hit the ground, or do I put my bare sockless feet in the way of these heavy things falling 8 feet? And I had to make a selfish decision on my part and move my feet out of the way of some of them and let them hit the ground and ultimately perish to save my own feet.
I am really sorry that you have a bobblehead graveyard of mourning and grief in your home. I'm sorry that you have choking hazards, potential choking hazards all over your floor for your new child. I do.
Well, I cleaned them up, Dan. I didn't just leave them there.
No, but the ones you found, you don't know where some other ones ended up. They could go spiraling away. I just want you to know that while you were talking about all these deaths and this mourning and this great destruction that causes you emotional pain, Greg Cody was doing nothing but narcissism, where he was grabbing, I believe, a bobblehead that was meant to be him 30 or 40 years ago and was just shaking it vigorously in the screen because he wanted everyone to know. I understand you have an important bobblehead collection, but what about this one of me, the only one I own?
Right.
Does everyone want to see me and what I'm about?
Well, I told you once that when I was in college, people would tell me that I looked like Tom Cruise, mm-hmm. and everybody laughed. But this bobblehead should be ultimate proof that that this is Tom Cruise, but it's me. I mean, imagine that.
It doesn't look like Tom Cruise, Greg.
Who does it look like then?
Hawk Harrison.
Kurt Russell.
Roy Orbison.
That's Tom Cruise right there.
It does look like,
Roy Orbison.
Actually, Cody got that when he was younger as well. This is the part he leaves out. He makes it Tom Cruise, but how much Roy Orbison were you getting? You also get some Jeffrey Loria and you get some Poppy as well.
Yeah, I've been mistaken at social events. I have literally been mistaken for Jeffrey Loria and Poppy. Never been mistaken for Roy Orbison, Pretty Woman, but maybe that'll happen in the future. Walking down the street, that kind of thing.
You also look like FDR.
I've never heard either.
I don't see that one.
FDR.
Nothing but fear, but fear itself, Greg.
You think Jeffrey Loria has ever been confused for Greg Cody? Someone comes up like, hey, weird to see you here at this fancy art auction. Love that article you wrote about Tua.
Love that bird, the imaginary bird you consult for your Friday football picks.
That would be funny. My stock answer, because I have been... likened to Jeffrey Loria. Hey, you look like, anybody ever told you look like Jeffrey Loria? And my stock answer is, I wish I looked like his bank account.
Good one.
That's pretty funny.
Why don't you just pretend to be him? Like, it is me.
I could do that. Oh. I could be an impersonator.
Guys, I misspoke. I'll pay a fine for it. You don't look like FDR. If you Google search Lyndon B. Johnson long hair, the first Google result is Greg Cody. I'm telling you right now, you look just like this photo of Lyndon B. Johnson.
Holy
I have been likened to LBJ, and it's because of the Cody ears. The Cody men have extraordinarily long ears with a little dimple in the lobe region. And, you know, that's something I'm proud of. My dad's ears were almost as long as his entire
something
head.
You're proud of. And, Amin, why are you roaring with laughter?
I Googled the picture that Mike told me to. It looks exactly like Greg.
I'm afraid to Google it, so I won't.
Lyndon B. Johnson.
Dan, I want you to do this. Just Google Lyndon B. Johnson long hair. It's Greg Cody. This is not an exaggeration. It's identical.
All right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it right now here.
Oh, that's hilarious.
How can
I'm a chameleon. I look like everybody.
Too. Oh wow, Greg. This is when he let it go, and he's got a little bit of De Niro in him as well, like old school De Niro gray hair where it's getting a little long in the back. It really is you, Greg. Thank you.
the photo is from a story that chronicles LBJ's final days. So you look like
he looks like deathbed LBJ.
Yeah, you look like deathbed Lyndon B. Johnson.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm very proud of the Civil Rights Act, by the way. I was glad we got that. I was glad we got that passed.
You did such amazing work during the Cold War.
I really did. I'm a chameleon. I look a little bit like Mike's a chameleon. Remember last week he came in with a rhinestone cowboy persona, and Mike shows up today looking like a lumberjack. I think Mike probably brought in a big axe as sort of a prop for today's look.
I did.
There you go.
Now, I just like to say that I'm extremely pleased and honored to have a fellow president in our midst. Lyndon Baines Johnson, you're responsible for some atrocities in American history, but also responsible for the Civil Rights Act. And for that, I say thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President.
I'm not so good at this in the morning, apparently. Voice and my throat are not quite ready to do the Obama impersonation.
Now, Barry Goldwater doesn't want you to have that.
You're really testing his knowledge of the LBJ presidency.
Oh, no. Hey, hello. Hold on, man. You know what Terminal 4 at Phoenix Sky Harbor is called? The Barry Goldwater Terminal. Relax. All right, I'm up to date on my 60s.
All right, you
politics.
Showed me. You walked through a Phoenix airport. You showed me. You really took me on a stroll through the 60s and 70s there because you got a terminal named after. I mean, what were you showing off there?
Jimi Hendrix. Yeah, I got my 60s and 70s down. Don't worry about me. Hey, who shot JFK? Huh? That's a reference.
What?
It's Who Shot JR from Dallas, the show.
Right.
Great show.
That was from the 80s, right?
That was in the 80s. Big hair. Big shoulder pads.
The JFK assassination also had an air of mystery to it, though.
Magic bullet.
Thank you, Billy.
Grassy Knoll.
Second shooter. There you go.
Kevin Book Costner. Depository.
Ooh.
Grassy Knoll.
Steve Martin also.
It's a Zapruder film.
You're watching too much Oliver Stone films in this podcast.
Ooh, you should go to the JFK Museum in Dallas, Texas.
It's worth your morbid. Time.
I have been, actually.
It's worth your time. And you know what? The George W. Bush Presidential Library on the campus of SMU. Also, it's kind
of... I'm good. Thanks.
Well, it's basically like a 9/11 museum. So the artifacts that they have from there and the history of that day in particular, because it's one of the many things his presidency will be remembered for, but probably most is that he was the president during 9/11. So it's a interesting 9/11 museum, actually.
Do they have the chair that he was sitting in?
That's the best part about the presidential library visit, is they have a full-size replica Oval Office of how he had.
Oh,
well, no, I think what Amin was saying, the classroom.
Oh, the classroom where he
was being told that
they had a photo of it, which I was surprised because it's a fairly infamous moment where he was in stunned silence in a kindergarten classroom being informed of it and waited several minutes to actually act on it.
He kept reading. They told him, he was like, okay, so the brown fox jumped over the creek. I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah. I'd like to think I would have handled that different, but I'm not necessarily comfortable armchair quarterbacking being informed as president
that
the Twin Towers have been attacked.
I would have the ultimate sports radio conversation.
Hold on. I got him going, oh, man. Oh, shit. Hey, I got to go, y'all. And he just gets up and storms out.
No, it's not just that. Amin is doing it the next step of storming out of the classroom and immediately apprehending bin Laden. Like, just going straight, just sprinting out and solving the crime.
How would you have handled 9/11? 786-456.
If you had been in a small classroom just reading children's books to kids and they gave you the unprecedented act of airplanes have been flown into our towers, you would have handled that how?
And what could have Donald Rumsfeld done differently? Let's have your take.
It's such a quaint time. Remember when that passed for incompetent leadership?
Oh, but yeah, when he delivered that perfect strike at Yankee Stadium.
What a pitch!
Oh.
What a pitch!
Hurrah.
Hurrah, I say, Mike.
Hurrah. It had some late movement on it. Hurrah, I say. Outside corner. The guy was painting that shit like Maddox.
In a suit.
If you would have told me that day that we'd still be in Afghanistan, I'd be like, no.
No, he threw
it away. This thing is over by November.
He hit the corner.
At east to west motion. Holy
painting
shit.
Painting the black.
While wearing a bulletproof vest.
Oh my God, how restrictive in winter. Bulky.
Would Donald Trump have been reelected if he could throw a strike?
It could have helped. Considering the history that we have, like the sample isn't necessarily a representative one, but it could have helped.
Maybe a jump shot, maybe a little step back, maybe that would have helped, you know. Okay.
Really died on you.
No, you're talking about the most famous basketball playing president of all time.
Unbelievable.
You do Bernie a great Sanders? Impersonation of him.
Oh.
Hand down, man down.
Wait a minute.
Come on, they're basketball terms.
You were Edward R. Murrow there.
I would have roasted his ass. Oh, shit. See, like, it's too early for this.
Who was that?
I don't know. It's too early. My voice is still morning voice. It still has that staccato underneath that's just, you can't get rid of it.
Obama, there goes that man.
You got him as a Texan now.
No, I had him as Mark Jackson because I'm trying to, like, do basketball.
As a Texan,
yeah.
Mark Jackson.
Yeah, well, because there's Mama. There goes that man. I don't claim to do an Obama here. I'm just trying to motivate you.
It's not about motivation. I'm gonna need to like clear my throat out or something. I don't know.
Would you care to? Moderna.
Let's just move on.
All right, that's fair.
Ronnie Scumble style. Let's move on.
This started with Greg not being able to find his back in my day. We started talking about cave people, then somehow went to bobbleheads, then ended up at JFK, and now we're here.
Starting is everything when it comes to fitness. Peloton helps you start no matter what level you're at. Wherever you're starting, there's thousands of classes to get you moving. Whether that's beginners or advanced rides, feel-good live DJ rides, or artist-themed rides, they've got something for you. Peloton bike instructors keep you motivated from day one. They'll show you the basics, help take the guesswork out of your workout, and encourage you to build from there. And now with Peloton Entertainment, you can keep moving and watch your favorite TV shows and live sports as you ride. Perfect for those days when you don't want to miss a thing. And if you don't have a bike, take a dance class, take a core class, take Pilates, take a stretching class, start a program with Andy, do a core program with Emma. You can do it all at Peloton. You can get a Peloton row, and you're not even going to get wet because it's inside your own house without water. How'd they do it? I don't know. Wherever you're starting, get moving with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike rentals. Terms apply.
Don Levitard.
Let's go to 80.
His Bo. Name is Bo.
Wow.
I think Billy typed an 8 instead of a B. Fine.
It's a clear as day. Bye.
$2. Stugatz.
Number 80. It's Chris Corner on the line. CC, go ahead.
This is the Don Levitard Show with the Stugatz.
What is me discombobulated?
That is a good way to start. We will start right there as Greg Cody asks, what is me discombobulated, which is what his tombstone on this show should read, because his discombobulation is something that we prey on at every turn. Stugatz is out. We got a lot of people on Zoom. Greg Cody is not here today. He will have a back in my day for you in a second. But since he asked about his discombobulation, because there's an assortment of sound that I want to get to here that involves the University of Texas president, that involves a minor league baseball game, and involves Greg Cody being discombobulated. As we told you, we are going to be popping up in various places as events close out on YouTube, just to have these little parties and little places where you can get a taste of the show. And on Friday night, during a baseball game, random Marlins-Yankees game, Mike Schur and Chris Cody and Billy were just sort of watching a game together, and they invited Greg Cody, the show killer. Everybody was very happy and excited to see Greg Cody. His first order of business was to fiddle and faddle with his mute with his microphone and with his headpiece. And he spent about 90 seconds to 2 minutes just distracting everybody with general incompetence. And then this is what happened. As you know, Mike Schur's baseball knowledge and his analysis is very strong. It's very good. And of course, he created Parks and Rec, so people wanted to hear from him. And here's Greg Cody making an appearance, just landing and getting in the way of everything and everyone.
They get these guys, like they got Luke Voigt from the Cardinals.
This is unbelievable.
It's totally believable.
Just Hello? Put it on vibrate. Don't take the call.
Well, it's clearly.
Should I take it all? Hello?
That's your cell phone. It says who it is. You know who's calling.
It says no caller ID. Who's calling?
Oh, wow.
Someone's Cam calling. Cam Likely?
No. They're calling who's like Star 67.
Is my wife calling? All right. I'm totally discombobulated right now. I got to admit it.
So the
this
point
is
ridiculous. If you stink,
I have derailed the show.
If you stink and you join the Yankees, you will become great. And that's what happened. And Rougned Odor was terrible for the Rangers and then terrible for the Yankees for like a couple weeks.
Yeah. All right, I'm turning off my phone. Whoever the F is doing, can I?
Why didn't you turn it off after the first one?
Interrupted Mike Schur without even meaning to.
It's okay. Don't worry.
I want to go back for a second and just, this is him arriving. This is him just screwing everything up. Mike Schur is trying to talk to the audience, talk to the guys. Billy, what? What are you making? What are you throwing your hand up for? This is how Greg Cody started the bidding, just getting in the way and playing defense against all the things Mike Schur was saying.
Was Greg Cody playing defense or was someone in the Zoom calling Greg Cody, interrupting
yes.
Mike Schur?
That's my suspicion.
Okay, you can make your accusations, but all I have proof of here is that you're incompetent and this is happening in your home with a landline, and inexplicably you pick up your phone and you answer it while Mike is talking. You don't know how to turn off the sound on your phone. Just, I want you to listen. Mike Schur is trying to get ahead with his points. Look at, this is by way of introduction, how Greg Cody gets in his way and plays defense against all competence.
They get these guys, like they got Luke Voigt from the Cardinals.
This is unbelievable.
It's totally believable.
Just Hello? Put it on vibrate. Don't take the call.
Well, it's clearly.
Should I take it all? Hello?
That's your cell phone. It says who it is. You know who's calling.
It says no caller ID. Who's calling?
Oh, wow.
Someone's Cam calling. Cam Likely?
No. They're calling
who's
like
calling?
Star 67.
Is my wife calling? Oh, all right. I'm totally discombobulated right now. I got to admit it.
So the
this
point is
ridiculous.
If you stink.
I have derailed the show.
If you stink and you join the Yankees, you will become great. And that's what happened. And Rougned Odor was terrible for the Rangers and then terrible for the Yankees for like a couple weeks.
Yeah. All right. I'm turning off my phone. Whoever the F is doing, can I?
Why didn't you turn it off after the first one?
Interrupted Mike Schur without even meaning to.
It's okay. Don't worry.
Here is the best part of that. The best part of that is not something that can even be seen or heard within that clip, which is a furious Greg Cody, mad at both his landline and his cell phone, which interrupted him 6 or 7 times, furiously staring silently in a camera with rage at his wife, who's trying to hobble with a broken foot to turn off phones for him because he doesn't know how to stop the distractions. Chris, you saw your father's rage at your poor mother who's got a broken foot and he wants her to turn off the landline.
She's literally over there with her foot elevated and he's giving her the motion of, can you get up? Can you get up and go? And it's just like, Dad.
It wasn't a walking boot. I'll give her that.
I mean, why are you filled with shame? You're incapable of shame.
Mrs. Cody with the broken foot, and you're mad at her? Oh, man. I mean, look, the crazy thing is, Dan, you can't write this stuff. I swear to God, people think this is the greatest produced segment ever. First, they have Adnan come in, and he's trying to masturbate a dog, and then here comes Greg Cody.
Whoa,
and
whoa.
By the way, my favorite part is Mike Schur, God bless him, he's just trying to power through it. He's trying to ignore it, and Greg keeps interrupting him to let him know, I keep interrupting the show. I'm derailing the show. He won't right, stop I'm- talking.
I love that people listening to this right now who may not have any context for either the Friday show or what we did yesterday are saying to themselves, wait a minute, did Amin say that Adnan then came on and masturbated a dog? And yes.
He did.
That is what...
yeah, it's on YouTube right now, if you're into that kind of thing.
So playing some more sound here, Mike, that I want to get to, because I can't believe the things that keep happening around grief and during baseball games.
By the way, if you want to hear Adnan discussing the masturbation of a dog, check out Cinephile this week. He will be addressing the incident.
I wanted him to address it here. I was told that it is going to be an exclusive to Cinephile where Adnan explains what the hell he was doing. I guess, Mike, you should play this sound for him as well, because we just think he was nervous around Mike Schur and trying to impress
him. I'm going to get to the bottom of like what his game plan was going in.
So you think that this thing with Cody was awkward? I mean, the arrival of Adnan to this YouTube special that was Unhinged, all I saw again and again, it was mouthed, I don't know, I'll say a dozen times between Chris and Billy, miming, pantomiming with their mouths at the camera, what is happening right now? Both of them, the producers of this show, are watching Adnan, who the chat is accusing of clearly entering on blow. That's what the accusation is, because he's just yammering and talking really fast. And Billy and Chris, again and again, a dozen times, say, what is happening?
Mark Harris, good guy. Like, I think we're going through the book. He definitely can tell. I read the book. I'm flying through this thing. I'm like, all right, tell me about Richard Burton. Let's go. But I said, here's the fun stuff, Dr. Doolittle. Which, by the way, Cody and Ferris did not know there was an original Dr. Doolittle.
I thought we were talking about Eddie Murphy. Yeah.
During one long evening at the Burtons, Robert sent their guest, Tennessee Williams, and director Joseph Losey running for the door. But in Burton's words, she insulted Rex. She's talking about Rex Harrison. Rex sexually, morally, physically, lay on the floor in the bar and bark like a dog, started to masturbate her basset hound.
Oh, Jesus Christ. What's happening?
I don't know. There's also another one. This is the book. And I'm like, how do I, you know, because to Mike's point, he has to know I read the book. Well, okay, listen, I highlighted this part. So, you know, I read it. There's also in material about a giraffe. There's also, I mean, there's stuff. It's so sordid. And my point is this, Mike. I figured I would use this at the end to really prove to Mark Harris what a fan I was of his work. But I don't think the crudity helped. I think it helped Cody and it helped our audience. But I think he was kind of like, so you read my book and you just looked at the perverted parts. Go ahead.
I was impressed. Have you ever met Mike before today?
No.
No. First meeting.
So you're like, your thing is in the first 5 minutes, let's talk about dog masturbation and giraffe.
Because I knew he would be able to relate to the subject matter. He would know what it's
how
like.
So?
Because he's a guest on the show and the guy's trying to impress him. He goes, okay, what's going to go with? So I figured masturbating a basset hound was definitely something he could at least appreciate.
That's a weird assumption to make.
Was he right or wrong?
I'm going to say he was wrong.
Chris Cody, you cringe more every time you hear it. I thought you were cringing the maximum amount on Friday. Oof. So you're going to get answers from Adnan on what the hell he was doing.
I'm going to judge him. I'm going to yell at him and say, what the hell was that? Explain yourself.
Cinephile, that comes out when? Thursday?
Yep.
All right. So we're going to embargo that for 2 days. You can't wait to get to the explanation for what the hell.
Percolating. I cannot wait to listen to this podcast. Should I follow the feed? It's Cinephile. How's that spelled?
Oh, God. C-I-N-E file.
All right. Excellent work. How's that spelled?
Hey, everybody. It's Mike. And typically, I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right. You crack that puppy open and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Libertard.
That bear was not on Hal's desk. deck. Excuse me. I was going to say desk. I meant deck. I botched it. Terrible. $2. Penalty box, 2 minutes. See ya. Home for the day. Walk to the ocean. What do you want me to do? Super Bowl week, Dan. I didn't ask for any of this. And I have no money. Aqua?
Stugatz.
Walk to the ocean.
What?
Walk to the ocean.
I really have no money.
Get out of here. Get out of here. I'll do the show without you.
I don't like.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz.
You know, the pandemic has in some very small places resulted in some ingenuity, some invention, some efficiencies that might allow for a different world going forward. Some of us working more from home, just seeing some inefficiencies exposed. One of the great things in the pandemic, I would say, to be birthed by sports, is that Tom Brenneman, at the very start of this, with a reverence to baseball that you could have written, comedy writers would have written in fiction, he was apologizing in the middle of cancel culture wars. He was apologizing for saying something homophobic. Generations of Brennemans were shamed by this. And in the middle of the apology, he stopped for a second in a Kansas City Royals Cincinnati Reds game as his career descended into the fire and called a home run by Castellanos. And we enjoyed just the comedic perfection of that at the very start of the pandemic. Something like this happened in the minor leagues over the weekend. It is pale compared to the Castellanos thing, but the announcer seems to know it's creeping up on him because he's telling a grief story, and you have to be careful in baseball with telling the grief stories too slowly because you always have to respect the possibility of a home run or this can happen.
I got a call from my mom when I was leaving the stadium on Monday when we returned from home and returned from the workday that my uncle Charlie had died. Unexpectedly, I was racing home, going probably way more than the speed limit, what I should have been doing to go check on the dog and then get over to the family's house real quickly. That kind of news, obviously everybody has probably had to experience that at one point or another. It's definitely shocking. It sends you shocks down the spine. So I've been in and out of work all week. You probably don't know that because I'm still on the headset and have been every night this week, but I've been in and out of work all week. I've been late. Trying to do stuff at 3 in the morning to get caught up so I could be with family all week. And some may say that, I know some people even in this organization have said I probably shouldn't be here at all, especially the last 3 days with the funerals. But I would argue that I need to be here. And this is going to take longer than I intended it to, but I'm just going to give you the visuals and hope we don't get Nick Castellanos and somebody hits a home run to tie the game right now. Of course. My goodness. I'm just going to come back to it in a second. Grant Haymon has just tied the ball game. Oh, that's going to put a wrench in my whole thing. But I love it. I needed this. I told the family today when I walked out, I need them to win tonight. So it's kind of a perfect time.
Ugh. Just the way you said that, I had a feeling that was going
to
happen.
There's a broadcaster's jinx. I'll point up to the sky. There's Uncle Charlie getting me back there.
That hurts. There's one result that is a base hit to right field doesn't do that. It's the sound of the bat tells you, oh, this poor minor league guy, no one is going to know about his suffering and his pain. All they're going to know is he chose the wrong time to tell us about his grief.
Of course.
It is such terrible timing. Greg Cody, do you have a back in my day today? Are you ready to do back in my day? Are you prepared?
I am. I'm in grieving about Uncle Charlie, though, RIP. But yeah, I do have a back in my day.
How do you feel about it?
I sort of like it if I haven't done it 3 years ago and forgot about it. I mean, if it's, I Googled it. I don't think I've done it, but you never know, right?
Okay, you never know. Let's do it.
You never know.
And now it is time to take a trip down memory lane. Here's your guy, Greg Cody, with Back in My Day.
Tickets. Over time, the paper ticket has become just another example of reverse evolution, regression, doing business as progress. The proud paper ticket once was the staple of transaction. Now it is a museum artifact. And you don't even need a paper ticket to get into that museum to see it, by the way. Get on an airplane or a ferry, go to an amusement park or a sporting event, go to a movie, go anywhere nowadays, and you are ticket free, my friend. It's so much simpler and more convenient. Except that it isn't either. I could hand someone my ticket and breeze through a turnstile five times over in the time it takes me to haul out my smartphone, access my email or text with the right barcode in it, and then wave that barcode just so over the scanner until it agrees to go beep and let me in. I tell you, barcodes are an invasive technological species taking over the world. They're ubiquitous now. I go to a restaurant and in lieu of a menu, there's a barcode decal on the table. It's like a Greg Cody Show podcast decal, but slightly smaller and not nearly as eye-pleasing. So you have to scan the barcode to access the menu, meaning instead of the luxury of a full-size menu in your midst, you have to scroll on a phone for a miniature version of the damn thing. You know, radio station 790 The Ticket should now be called 790 The Barcode. The barcode for me is a visual ripoff of the Rorschach inkblot test, which was invented by Swiss psychologist Hermann Rorschach to invent underlying thought disorder. Hermann would die of a ruptured appendix in 1922 at age 37. The villains who gave us the barcode were Norman Woodland and Bernard Silver, who patented the idea in 1951 based on the Morse code extended to thick and thin bars. Understandably, it took almost 30 years for the crackpot idea to become commercially successful. Remember when you'd go to a memorable sporting event and you'd save your ticket stub in a scrapbook? Section 112, row H, seat 5. Now you've got a bunch of lookalike barcodes in your scrapbook. Not that anybody has scrapbooks anymore. I miss the very feel in my hand of a physical ticket, aka the ducat, which supposedly is pronounced ducat, although I have always pronounced it ducat and always will. The paper ticket wasn't really ever paper, of course, but a type of thickness of fiber known in the trade as cardstock. It had the heft of a business card, also disappearing, but the lightness to be ripped in two. The stub, the proof of rightful admission, left firmly in your paw. The sad evolution has seen the ticket go from the physical cardstock you held to something you could go online and print out, to something now hidden mysteriously in the dark web of a barcode. This is progress? Bring back my ticket, a reassuring small, thin cardboard rectangle, something that has a stub, something you can use a hole puncher on. I want something in my hand that proves I paid to get in. I want something with reassuring instructions like retain in event of rain. Friend, there's only one kind of bar I want in my life, and it ain't a barcode. I'm Greg Cody, and that's how it works.
Yes. Greg, I just want to hear this sentence so that I could put it on the poll correctly. Are barcodes an invasive species taking over what? Excuse me, what did you say? He's got to go back into the garbage can to get his writing. Put it on the poll, please, at your convenience, Billy, at Lebitard Show. Go ahead. What's it say?
Are barcodes are an invasive technological species taking over the world.
Dan, last night at 3:40 in the morning, I read that barcodes read the white lines, not the black lines. I don't know if it's true, but I read that.
Put that on the poll as well. Barcodes, when barcodes are read, are the black lines being read or the white lines? At Lebitard Show, an invasive technological. I believe that is a good one from Greg Cody. I also miss the ticket. I did not know the barcode was invented in 1951. What took us so long to make it go 50 years? We were doing this inefficiently.
You guys don't like the QR code menus? It's so convenient now. You just walk up to a restaurant, put your iPhone out, take a picture.
Then I gotta like zoom and stuff. Like just hand the menu.
It's all on your phone. It's nice.
Phone schmoan.
790 the barcode.
Phone schmoan.
Right. Phone schmoan.
All right. Just wanted to make sure I heard you correctly.
He's right.
Thank you, Billy.
Does also encourage phone use at the dinner table, which we shouldn't be doing.
Okay, you know what my pet peeve was? My pet peeve was when you go to a restaurant and like my parents do this. Anyone over the age of like 55 does this. They take out their iPhone flashlight to shine a light on the menu because they can't read it because it's too dark in the restaurant. And so all like a bunch of old people restaurants like in my hometown now, they got like these backlit menus. So there'd be like a light behind the paper to illuminate it. And it's like so embarrassing. And now you could just look it on your phone. It's so much easier. I think it's easier on the senior citizens' eyes. You know, you just get your reading glasses out, magnify it. It's on the phone. You don't have to light it up. You don't have to pull out your flashlight, embarrass your children.
Wow. Jessica making fun of the elderly.
Hold on.
Despicable. Why are you embarrassed? Because you should be upset at these poorly lit establishments.
That's what I'm thinking.
Why are the lights so low?
Because it's never that dark. Yep. It's always like in a very like normally lit place, and everyone pulls out their flashlight and they're like, what does this say? What is the special?
You would think in the evening a restaurant would make their lights brighter, but they don't.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The sun goes
down.
Before
I say to the waitress, what, you guys didn't pay the electric bill around here? What's going on?
Yeah, one of the hits.
What are you worried about? Ambiance? Get out of here.
You want the ambiance of a doctor's office while you're eating dinner, yes. Cody?
Why is it cool at concerts to have your flashlight on your phone on, but not at a restaurant? Riddle me that.
I will be 110 years old refusing to take out my cell phone flashlight on the menu because I think it signifies you've punted on life.
Thank you. I agree.
I disagree. We all age on the same trajectory. You'll say that now, and I'll check in with you at 60.
No. Are you familiar with my work? I will order the chicken parm, not even knowing if it's a part of the menu. I will not do this.
By the way, punting on life. Why is that such a bad thing? Sometimes you punt, you pin them down under the five, and then you get them to turn it over on downs. And now guess what? We've got great field position.
That's right.
Yeah, but you got a coffin corner situation.
It's a gack.
The game of field position, Amin.
Dave wants that right there with you.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. Punting on life. Is it so bad?
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.